From Albuquerque this week, I'm Joey Peters.
I'm Matthew Reichbach.
And it's the Weekly Word.
We're here this week with Trip Jennings, my old workmate at NMI, and he's over at New Mexico In Depth right now.
What is NMI?
New Mexico Independent. What was NMI? R.I.P.
Yeah, so we're going to talk with Trip Jennings about New Mexico In Depth, particularly their coverage of the behavioral health crisis.
Yeah, we'll get into what NM In Depth is, what they're doing, and a recent letter an open letter to the governor that Trip wrote. We'll have that and more when we get back.
And we're back, and I'm Joey Peters with the Santa Fe Reporter.
I'm Matthew Reichbach with NM Telegram.
We're here with Trip Jennings of New Mexico In Depth. Trip, how's it going?
How's it going, guys?
I think you should start off by explaining to us just briefly what New Mexico In Depth is and what you're doing there.
Yeah, so New Mexico In Depth is about a year old. Heath Hauseman, you guys know Heath. Matt, Heath, and I worked at New Mexico Independent for a while. Heath and I...
R.I.P. NMI.
Huh?
R.I.P. NMI.
Yeah, exactly, R.I.P. We started this up about a year ago, and our goal is to basically, you know, kind of help do more in-depth kind of investigative work in New Mexico. We have relationships with Santa Fe Reporter.
That's right.
Santa Fe New Mexican, Las Cruces Sun News, KUNM, Fronteras Desk. This is a project of NPR. We're trying to create a web of relationships where we can, you know, get at some really big issues out there.
It's like print and radio. And
print, radio, you know, and hope one day, you know, TV maybe.
And so, and some of the issues you're focusing on, healthcare, immigration, I guess, how are you deciding to pick these issues?
Well, part, you know, with healthcare, this is one of these situations where it's kind of like what we know. I've covered Medicaid for the last several years for several different media outlets. I understand healthcare, so that seemed to be a natural segue for me. And immigration, Heath is down on the border. He's in Las Cruces, and this is something we're both interested in. You know, as you guys know, and I'll say on the podcast, we've been funded by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation and McCune Foundation. And part of our subject areas are poverty, healthcare, politics, education. And these are natural kind of like journalistic subject matters and how all these things connect. You know, New Mexico basically comes up next to last or last in a lot of categories, and why is that? And so we're asking questions about, you know, healthcare, education, how does that all fit?
Right, yeah, it's kind of getting the big picture in a state like this that's more of a poor state.
Yeah.
And like you said, ranks last in a lot of these subjects. So one of the among the healthcare coverage, you know, I've been seeing a lot of stuff on the behavioral health crisis, as they call it, from you guys appearing in the New Mexican. And what are some of the other newspapers that coverage has been appearing in?
Las Cruces Sun News. And you know, they are owned by Media News.
Yeah, a whole big consortium of newspapers.
Yeah, so they have like six other papers, I think. So Farmington,
Deming, Silver
so
City.
Those, you know, they've had some coverage in those as well. So we kind of have some reach print-wise.
And so with this behavioral health crisis, or however you want to call it, can you just brief us a little bit on what's going on there, and then I want to talk about a column you wrote this week, an open letter to the governor on some transparency issues.
So what's going on with behavioral health? You know, it's sort of interesting. Can I start with a little bit of history?
Yeah, go ahead.
Because back when I worked, when Matt and I were colleagues at New Mexico Independent, in 2009, the state went with a new contractor, a managed care company, to basically manage all of behavioral health, and they Optum Health. Optum Health had a rough start. Their claim system didn't process a lot of claims, and there was a crisis then. and Optum, the state forced Optum to set aside a fund through which they could pay providers because the claims weren't being paid on time. And there were some providers that were kind of scared about going under. Sorry, go ahead. You want to ask me a question?
When we talk about behavioral health and... What do we talk... what kind of patients are we talking about?
Yeah,
here?
Sure.
We're talking about Medicaid and state payments, right?
Yeah, we're talking about Medicaid. And we're talking about people who are struggling with mental illness, such as mental illness. We're talking about people who are struggling with drug addiction and other situations. And these are low-income people. So we're talking about a fragile population. What's happening, as you know, Joey and Matt, is that the administration, Governor Martinez's administration, because of an audit, found some problems with reporting, billing, and stuff like this.
With 15 providers, 15, right?
15
that
providers.
Represent, what, 87% of the...
The funding, this is the money that is behavioral health money, yeah.
And this is, when you mentioned Optum Health... They're the ones that contracted to do this audit.
Well,
this, right?
What happened was is they've been sort of, because of the managed care company, the way I understand it is that they install new software. And sometime in 2012, I think, they started data mining some of these providers, and they found some problematic billing. And then that led the state to contract with Public Consulting Group, Inc. out of New England, out of Massachusetts. They're the ones that did this audit that found all these problems with these 15 providers. But I can get into the process deeper in the process if you guys want me
to. So the audit came down and it found some problems. And what were those problems, Tripp?
I don't really know.
And I know we're kind of leading you here, but why don't we know?
You're leading the witness. You're leading the witness. We don't know because basically there's been a lot of silence. I mean, the administration found – here's the thing, all right? So go.
You go ahead.
Basically you have these problems. And what I know from looking at the 18-page executive summary, which is turned over to us by the AG's office, you know, Bryant Furlow is – you know, he's a IPRA guy, public records guy.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of public records. We didn't get the audit. Nobody has the audit. But he did get the 18-page summary. And what we see in that is that this audit that PCG did of all these 15 providers, they ranked them. They created scorecards with the help of HSD, Human Services Department. And then based on those scorecards, they ranked all these 15 providers in risk tiers. One being the lowest, four being the highest. Eight of those providers were put in tier two. And they being PGG, basically, recommended state action. Seven or more tier three. Tier four was credible allegation of fraud, which only the state can decide what that means, not PCG.
Okay. So who is in tier four?
15 of them now because the state basically. So you got eight in tier two. Seven in tier three, and in the note in this 18-page summary, they say we, PCG, can't decide what credible allegation of fraud is. Only the state can. And so that's something I don't know.
And we don't know what makes you in tier one, what makes you in tier two.
No, we don't know any of that stuff.
And so we're talking about like why we don't know, and it hasn't been released. And I know that the state has said, you know, the attorney general told us we can't release it. But they don't have to listen to the attorney general unless he just gives opinions, right?
That's my understanding. You know, the situation here is that if the state had suspended payments and they had an option. They could have had good cause exemption. They didn't have to suspend payments. Federal regulations allowed them to do some good cause exemption before suspending payments. If it had been one provider they suspended payments with, or two or three, do I think that there'd be this much protesting? Probably not. But they did it to 15 providers, which is kind of a striking action.
And so how many patients does that affect?
How many patients are under these 15 providers?
Yeah,
we're served by these providers. I think around 30,000 of 85,000.
Yeah, so that's the number I've heard, too.
So where do we stand now? So let's keep up with the narrative where we're going. So they suspended these payments.
Yeah.
Which basically means these guys don't get any Medicaid money.
They don't get any behavioral health Medicaid money. Okay. So Medicaid is also physical Medicaid, which is a larger part of money. But I don't know if you want to get in the weeds there.
Yeah, okay, well, they don't get any let's see if we can go without going there.
Right.
So they don't get the behavioral health money.
Right.
And then now, so somebody has to do the behavioral health care because this is a community in need. So then they contract out to a couple, was it four companies in Arizona?
Five
companies?
Yeah.
And there's been some criticism over how that transition has gone, right?
Yes. Well, I mean, I think what's happening in like Las Cruces, and then, if you read the Taos News, Sun News is doing a good job down in Las Cruces. Taos News is covering this transition really well. There are some disruptions in care, it seems like. Is it catastrophic? It doesn't seem like it. It seems probably going as smooth as something this drastic, is going.
Yeah, regarding the circumstances.
Yeah, right, exactly. So,
but one narrative we have heard from the governor's office or from the administration, HSD, is that no patients will be affected by this.
Yeah, and frankly, I think that it's unwise for them to have said that there are going to be no disruptions, because the reason I say that is because, first off, this is a very complicated behavioral health is really complicated. You're talking about a fragile population. You're talking about changing managements of some of these providers.
Yeah, and some of these providers have been, doing it for 30 years, 40
exactly.
years.
We have also run into situations where Bryant Furlow, who has been working with us, seems to have found that we don't know how many people were affected, but Team Builders, which is one of the providers that's basically targeted by the credible allegation of fraud, has switched over. A company from Arizona has taken over, but there was a point at which Team Builders stopped taking children and being referred to their care.
In July, right?
Right. And there seemed to be that, they were not going to accept any more patients. We did a blog saying that we were getting conflicting messages because people were telling Bryant on the ground this was happening, but the state was saying, no, it's
basically
not happening.
People were telling Bryant that Team Builders had stopped accepting.
Yeah, the referrals is what they're.
Referrals.
Yeah.
The state had told you the opposite.
That they continue to take referrals. And the way they manage the statements, if you work with words all day, you analyze how words are put together. And we couldn't nail anything down, so we put up a blog saying we're getting conflicting reports. Some people on the ground are telling us this is happening. The state's saying everything's okay. Within an hour of putting that blog up, we got a memo from back in July. Somebody gave us a memo from the Team Builders president at the time saying that they were no longer going to accept referrals.
Wow. So the memo comes right to you, kind of confirms that they're not
And again, right, exactly. We get that confirmation. We don't know how many people were affected because we're not in every community and taking that. But it's one of these, it's a very complicated story to report. And I think that even more, what's also complicating it is that we're not really getting a lot of information from the state, from the Human Services Department.
So I think we can use that as kind of a segue into something that you wrote this week.
Oh, yes.
That I don't know if anybody's talked to you about this yet, but you you wrote an open letter to Governor Martinez.
I have to send a shout out to Elaine Baumgartel because she has talked to me about this at KUNM.
Okay. Yeah, that will have aired before this.
Yeah.
This goes up on. So basically, the open letter, you were saying it that, hey, we need more transparency on this. You're basically telling us, trust us. And I'm a journalist, and when I hear trust us, I think, wait, there's something not to trust here.
Yeah, it's. I was trying to write a respectful thing. I've never actually You know, I did write a letter. I titled it an open letter to Governor Martinez because here's a situation where we're not getting a lot of information from Human Services Department. I asked her, basically what triggered this is she had an editorial meeting with the Las Cruces Sun News last week. Mm-hmm. And the managing editor down there basically suggested that, you know, her administration was taking a trust us approach. And according to his recounting of the meeting, she said, yeah, and it's your job to make it clear. And so I thought that if she's going to say that, then I thought that maybe it, you know.
What does that even mean?
Well,
it's your job to be her spokesperson.
So I don't know what that means, actually. So I wrote an open letter giving her the benefit of the doubt, suggesting that maybe if she wants to be helpful, here's some things she can do.
Okay.
She can basically tell her spokespeople to start pretending to answer our questions. Answer their phones. I understand this is a complicated situation. I'm empathetic with the job they have to do. But when I'm asking serious questions, and I pointed this out in my column, I asked them questions about how they made the decisions to reach credible allegation of fraud and why 15 providers were found to have credible allegations of fraud lodged against them. I waited 4 days, and I got a statement that didn't answer my question. And I'll be honest with you, that's like beating my head against the wall, and that was not a lot of fun as a journalist. And I will say that this is not about Governor Susana Martinez.
Yeah, I was going to say, I remember when we were working at NMI that you wasted a lot of gas driving around Richardson for some ribbon cutting ceremonies to try to get a question on it.
Yes.
And get an answer on a story.
And it happened to do with, you know, the scandal regarding investments. And so I hit the Richardson administration really hard. The governor's office didn't respond to my emails, didn't return my phone calls. This is not a Republican Democrat conservative liberal thing. This is a, when we ask questions, we'd like answers. And the respect of at least pretending to answer the questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we know that the Santa Fe Reporter has some well-documented problems with getting responses as well, right, Joey?
Definitely. And as we were discussing before the podcast, it's not just us at the Reporter having troubles. It's not just New Mexico In Depth having troubles. You know, talking about back at the beginning of 2012, the AP couldn't get the daily schedule from Governor Martinez, and we did the same IPRA at our paper too, and didn't get it either. So this has been kind of these transparency issues have been kind of slowly bubbling, and your letter to Governor Martinez came out today, and just is at least in the journalism community, it was getting a lot of recognition because I think. That's one of the main reasons why.
And can I say also that the candidate, Susana Martinez, sort of set the standard that we're all measuring her against by saying that she was going to be the anti-Richardson and she was going to be very transparent. And when the media, you know, basically when you say that as a candidate on the campaign trail, the media is going to try to hold it to you.
Yeah, and we see the same thing at the national level with Obama.
Exactly. It's Obama is exactly.
And then you get in there like, wait a minute.
Wait a second.
I kind of don't want to tell people these things. And then I should mention when we're talking about transparency, Joey, your paper recently got the award for from New Mexico Foundation Open Government for open government issues.
Yes.
And then also your colleague Heath Houseman over there trip, he also got an award. So
they shared, yeah, Heath and the Reporter shared the award.
Yeah, so we're what's the right word?
Excited and proud and
not excited, proud, happy, gratitude.
Yeah, gratified by that. I mean, and frankly, I hope that sends a message that, you know, being aggressive, like asking questions, demanding answers, you know, I hope that sends a message to reporters everywhere that it's good to be. You have to be respectful, but be aggressive.
Uh huh. One more thing I want to get to in your open letter. You mentioned, I mean, we talk about this audit that happened, and this audit is the reason why the state pulled the Medicaid funding, because the audit allegedly found, what, $37 million in overpayments?
36, yeah.
36, yeah. Between these 15 organizations. So that's, you know, waste. If it's true, that's waste, and that's why. And that's why they're – and but this audit itself, you talked about how – you guys have never been able to see it. The public has never been able to see it. The Foundation for Open Government themselves has called for the audit to become public. And, yeah. You know, here you guys are, and I'm in depth, trying to get the audit for weeks and weeks and weeks. And then the Albuquerque Journal runs a story that has portions of this audit. And you mentioned that in the open letter.
The journal? You're talking about that?
Yeah.
That thing? So, yes. A colleague of my of somebody I know, Deborah Baker, who works at the Journal, wonderful reporter. Somebody gave her access, I think, to this was basically portions of the audit that have not been disclosed, because we, Bryant, Furlow, and I looked at everything we have turned over. Nothing in our files. We have a lot of documents.
Yeah, don't you guys have a page now?
Yes,
that has all those documents.
Thank you,
up?
Matt. Medicaid freeze. On New Mexico in Depths, if you go to our homepage, click on Medicaid Freeze, you'll see a lot of our stories, but you'll also see a rundown of some of the documents that we've gotten for journalists who are really intent on this issue. They can go in there and look and see what we have. Maybe we've missed something, and that's for sure. This is a complicated thing.
With your 49 IPRAs.
Yeah. That's Brian Furlow, Mr. IPRA. So the journal runs a story where they point out there's some activity with team builders that seems to need to bear some more scrutiny about, you know, team builders actually leasing some buildings from companies that have some connections to some of the team builders' owners. So, I mean, that bears scrutiny. There's no question. But
I think that our point, what we're all saying is we'd like to know what the specific allegations are. That way we can maybe not make a decision, but at least show the reasoning behind.
Well, I think that the press is here to create space for a society to have informed debate. And to have an informed debate about government's decisions, you need to have facts. And I think the journal story was a good one. I think there was a little more context needed for the journal story, like where are the allegations for the other 14 providers? I sort of understand why now. Maybe the state said there was credible allegation of fraud against team builders. And let me talk about credible allegation of fraud. That doesn't mean they discovered Medicaid fraud. That doesn't mean that at all. That's a standard created by the 2010 federal healthcare law. Credible allegation of fraud is a lesser standard than the previous standard, which was reliable evidence of fraud. And the state has flexibility in defining what credible allegation of fraud is. And part of my open letter is telling this to the governor, saying, we'd like to know the process by which you chose to find credible allegation of fraud against these providers. But also, I'd like to know why credible allegation of fraud was found against all 15 when the audit itself revealed that 8 of the providers were ranked in, you know, lesser financial risk, it seemed like, right, than another 7.
Right.
So there seem to be a lot of questions out there. And let me say that what they're doing is legal by the federal regulations. What they're doing is legal. Everything is legal. But that doesn't mean there aren't questions that need answering. That's where we're coming from.
Yeah, so basically it's legal, but we want to know their reasoning.
Yeah, exactly. And that seems to be the part of the press's responsibility.
And so, nobody really knows how the Albuquerque Journal got that information, but you say in your column, a leak from the administration makes the most sense politically to you.
Yes.
Why is that?
Well, because I think that if you've been paying attention to a lot of the let me give you an example. When I was asking very specific questions about some of the issues I just raised, I waited 4 days, and I got a statement basically from HSD saying, we're not going to ignore Medicaid fraud. Well, that wasn't my question. I think that what is happening here is the administration has we're going after Medicaid fraud. 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 That's the narrative they're creating.
Yeah.
And so the Team Builders leak says, look, we're going after Medicaid
right.
fraud. I mean, that's and frankly, that was a pretty striking example. So what I'm saying is that bears a little scrutiny, a little more scrutiny. I understand why they would send that over to the AG's office or whomever they send it to.
So we're talking about the 49 IPRAs or whatever, the 49 records requests that Bryant, was it Bryant that made those?
Yeah.
HSD put out a tweet.
Yes.
Was that after the open letter?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So after this letter comes out, that you wrote, the HSD, Human Services Department, tweets out on Twitter something to the effect of we want to work with New Mexico in depth on providing them the information, but it's hard to, you know, get everything out there quickly when there's 49 IPRAs waiting, or, you know, something to that effect. What does that kind of response say to you, though?
I think what they said was, we try to be responsive, but 49 IPRAs from New Mexico in depth. And so my response is, I ask questions. I didn't file an IPRA. I didn't ask for a records interview. I wanted questions answered. And it's been 2 weeks since I've asked those questions. I actually, after the tweet yesterday, I called HSD, their press office, and said, I saw your tweet yesterday. Thanks for being responsive. I'm hoping you're going to give me answers, because it's been 2 weeks. So the thing about it seems to be a little bit of misdirection. This is now. Let me say this: I empathize with Matt Kennicott and these guys who are doing a lot of work trying to respond to IPRA.
That's the PIO over at HSD.
Yes, yes. And frankly, he and I have had a good relationship over the years. I mean, I like Matt, but I don't like when government agencies and PIOs don't answer my questions and basically stonewall me. And when they misdirect by saying, we've got 49 IPRAs, I didn't file an IPRA. I had questions.
Yeah, we've had a good relationship with Matt, too. We even named him in our Patron Awards the best flack.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Matt's, I think, a good guy. But something's going on here as far as direction from elsewhere about not, you know, why is it that they're not releasing information?
And I think that we've kind of – I think Joey has one more thing.
Well, so besides that tweet, what other kind of responses have you heard, at least from the state, since this letter came out? Have you heard much from the administration?
No. I mean,
is there anybody coming forward saying, we're more willing to work with you now or not?
Oh, not – no. And frankly, let me check my phone because I left a message. I'm going to do this right on the podcast to see if I've gotten a message back saying they've got answers for me. No, I don't have a voicemail here. So
we're here Friday afternoon. We're doing it Friday evening. So
yeah, and
probably by the time it comes up on Monday morning,
I might have gotten an answer. I don't mean to poke the administration in the eye here, but let me be clear about this. Again, let me say it again. This is not about Governor Susana Martinez and her administration. This is about the press asking questions and wanting answers. And, you know, Matt was there at NMI when we did this with Richardson and those guys. We did the same thing.
We got some fun emails back.
Yeah,
I was going to say, did you get the same treatment?
Well, can I tell you? I mean, I mentioned this in the open letter. Matt was referring to it. I, you know, spent a lot of gas tracking the governor Richardson around, asking him the question. I would ask him the question. They would shuttle him into the SUV. Finally, I asked the question in the fourth floor, and one of the press people had enough. And I remember turning around and walking away from, if you've been in the cabinet room, there's a room, and the governor's office is off to the cabinet room. The entourage had gone into the cabinet room. They closed the door. I turn around, and all of a sudden I hear somebody saying, chicken, Can I say that
word? You
can
say it.
Chicken shit. That was chicken shit, Jennings. And somebody coming after me, it was one of the press people.
Well, I hope they weren't calling you a chicken shit if you're up there trying to get that quote.
I think they were very angry. And I think this person and I had, and this guy is a good guy, but he and I had it out that day. And people in the journalistic community were like asking me for like weeks, what happened? What happened? And I'm like, they didn't answer my question. So, yeah, I drove those guys nuts in the Richardson administration.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you real quick, on this open letter, I mean, we've seen it. I think every journalist we know has shared it on Facebook or has emailed it to each other.
Yeah.
What kind of response have you gotten from, you know, your colleagues in the
media? I've gotten Twitter messages from folks saying, thank you for saying stuff I can't say, you know, or way to go, give them hell. I honestly was a little
taken aback.
Well, I was hesitant to you have to think about posting an open letter to a public official.
Well, yeah, cuz I mean, you say again and again this isn't about Governor Martinez. But obviously, you know, some partisans are going to take that way.
Well, yeah, well, you know, they can take it whatever they want to. I can, you know, I want to tell some of the folks on Twitter who have been
Let's just not even get into that.
Yeah. I sort of kind of want to say, where were you guys back in 2008 and 9 and 10 when we were like just really hard after the Richardson administration?
I don't want to get into it.
Yeah, Matt's right.
I think the global filter on TweetDeck is the greatest invention in social media. But real quick, Trip, I wanted to ask you about the one of the other projects you guys are doing, the Native American things. I spent some time up in the Navajo Nation last month. Can you just like real quick, you know, give us a thumbnail sketch of what you guys are doing?
We have started the Native American Project several months ago. Bryant Furlow is someone who's working on this. Laura Paskus is all working on this. Andy Murphy, who is a young Navajo reporter at the Las Cruces Sun News, is working on this. We're trying to get some other folks involved. What we're trying to do is maybe, you know, get out into the communities, and it's my impression, and I don't think I'm alone in this, that there's the Native communities are not being served necessarily by a lot of media outlets out there. And there's a lot of reasons for that. I don't mean that to be like just a patent criticism on media outlets. It's tough to report on Native communities.
No, I totally agree with you. There's so many reasons. One, it's really hard to access.
Yes, very hard to access. And a lot of them also are way out there. Geographically, it's hard to access as well.
Yeah.
And then you also have, these are sovereign nations. They don't have the same rules necessarily that the state has for, you know, public requests or documents and stuff like
and,
that.
And it's a completely different culture. They're all different cultures, too. It's not that's what I was telling an out-of-state reporter that was like, you know, this culture that you're talking to, they go back thousands of years. They're completely divergent from any sort of culture that we have. And you have to be able to respect that. So, and I think that's another reason why it's so hard and why so many news organizations don't do it, because it's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work, and I want to say, you know, 22 federally recognized tribes, and there are, 19 Pueblos, the Navajo Nation, and two Apache reservations.
That's in New Mexico.
In New Mexico.
Alone.
And, you know, these are not these individual reservations, tribes, Pueblos, what do you want to call them? They're not all the same. They have different cultures in some cases, and so, and they're also sovereign.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people, I've heard this criticism of the press before, is that we're not interested in covering these issues, and that's, at least from my point of view, that's not the case. It's just what you just described.
It's daunting when you think about this. I mean, of trying to cover these issues.
Yeah, driving. I mean, if you want to go up to the Navajo Nation to do a story, you might start in Farmington, end up in Window Rock. The next day, you're up near Monument Valley.
Exactly.
I mean, you can put a couple thousand miles in your car pretty easily.
Exactly.
But yeah, but I do think it's a really important thing that very, very few outlets do, unless they're solely devoted to it, or it's like the in Gallup, where there's a huge Native community.
Right, Gallup. You know,
Shiprocker.
Yeah, there are some outlets that do this. You know, there's some Navajo news in the Farmington, area, you know, Farmington paper. Navajo Times does stuff. I mean, but, you know, in the central, the Rio Grande Valley, there's not a lot of coverage of this stuff.
Yeah. Well, Tripp, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, man.
What's your position over there?
I'm the executive director New Mexico In Depth.
And that's nmindepth.com, and you can also read the coverage in New Mexican and
the Las Cruces Sun News and, yeah,
Farmington. A lot of the papers, and soon The Reporter.
Yeah, soon The Reporter, exactly. Joey and I are going to do something together, I think.
Yeah, we're excited about that. Yeah. So, yeah, check it out. I'm Joey Peters with the Santa Fe Reporter.
I'm Matthew Reichbach, nmtelegram.com. You can catch my stuff at sfreporter.com also. And once again, thanks, Tripp, for coming.
Cool hanging out with you guys.
And we'll see you guys next week.